Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there. Good morning, everybody. Glad to be with you here on Sports Daily. It is a Tuesday, and you do have Jacob Albrock and Tommy Caster, Max Power producing. Thanks for tuning in on KFH. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Also on Facebook, YouTube, X, all the different ways you take in the show. We appreciate it. Also finding us on the Odyssey app, the iHeartRadio app. We are coming at you from all different directions here on Sports Daily. We got a fun show coming up for you today. It is after what been a sort of slow offseason, certainly not slow anymore for the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to bring in our Chiefs insider, Felix Johnson, to discuss all the different things happening as they are now in training camp. Can you believe that? Training camp's here. We're doing it. We're doing that thing. And we'll also talk about some of the other NFL storylines. Jerry Jones can't get out of his own way again, to the surprise of nobody. It's just there's stuff. There's activity out there in the NFL as we're ramping up now into that season. So we'll get to all that. The Aftershocks play tonight. Jayhawks hoop advance in the TBT tournament going on right now. We'll discuss a little bit there. And the Royals find their power for sure. They continue to find their power here in the month of July, really. It's all what's on tap for you today, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company. With WBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, a German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character. It's smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew. It's available at all three WBC brew pubs. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm here. I'm hanging in there. My allergies are acting up today. I don't know if it's the change in the weather that we saw last night, but my nose has been a faucet. My eyes watering like crazy. I've been like sneezing like crazy. Here's the thing. You know you're married when your wife gets mad at you for sneezing. Like she's like, can you sneeze a little bit quieter? And I'm like, this is just the way that I am. Like this, the way God made me. I can't change the way I sneeze. But I'm here. I'm hanging in there.
One of my favorite stand-up bits for a long time is a guy was like, people ask me what it's like to be married, and I say, you want to know what it's like to be married? Imagine being in a room and sneezing more than one time, and from the other room, somebody screaming, why don't you just die already?
Understandable. I can relate to that big time. So that's going on. Then we had that big thunderstorm roll through last night. That was loud.
Yeah, look, it could be allergies. It could be a little cold. It's bugging through. We haven't slept in like a week. Ugh. Our son has swimmer's ear. I hope that you don't have none of your kids deal with that. It is. You want to talk, it must be the most painful thing in the world. I feel like I had it as a kid. I don't remember, but man, it kills it. It is like we finally figured out what it is. So we're trying to get it under wraps. Every night we get a wake up call that the old ear's hurting. So we're surviving. We're just a couple 40-year-old dudes, you know, just taking life's blows and waking up early and kicking right along here with it on Sports Daily.
I loaded up with the meds, by the way, last night before I went to bed. You know, I've got the Zyrtec, I've got the nasal spray, I've got all these different things, and I feel good. I'm like relaxed. I'm settled down into bed. I fall asleep. I may be asleep for 30 minutes, and then the storm rolls in, and like big clap of thunder, and I am awake, and I'm up. I mean, we're here. I'm trying to, you know, caffeinate myself to get through the next couple of hours.
Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for all that caffeination. An endless supply there in studio for us with the large dispenser thing that they have that brews that's great every time. Every time I'm in there, I know you guys use it in the morning, especially when I'm in there on those long infinity shifts. I bet I have 13 cups of coffee just because it's hot and it's good on the. I'll be on Sunday morning, by the way. If you're driving around Sunday morning, you can hop on the Infinity Sports Network at 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. We'll be having some fun. We have things to talk about now, and that includes here. The Royals have found their power, Tommy, continue to find their power here in the month of July. They win 12-4 last night. Salvador Perez with a couple more home runs. You were joking with me that John Rave is leading the American League in home runs. And I'm like, that's what the craziest part about that is. And this is post All-Star break. The craziest part about that is anybody's leading Salvador Perez at this point.
Yeah, well, and that's not the case anymore. Salvi retook the lead with that home run late in the game last night. So I think it goes Salvi 1, John Rave number 2 in the American League with home runs. Like, move over Aaron Judge. Move over Cal Raleigh. It is Salvador Perez and John Rave after the All-Star break.
And it is Jack Caglione finding his power a little bit. So in the month of July, right now, after being the very bottom end of baseball and home runs, the Royals are 8th in home runs across Major League Baseball in the month of July. I don't know if any of this is going to be enough. I don't know if they're going to be able to hold it together. They're back to 4.5 games back. And 6.5 games back of the Yankees. I don't know if any of it's going to be enough, but we've said it for a long time, at least I have. There is a law of averages thing that's bound to happen at some point this year with the offense. Nobody ever expected this to be one of the best offenses in baseball, but nobody expected it to be the worst offense in baseball, which essentially it was through the month of June. There is some correction coming. This may be what we're seeing now, which would be great timing, but it's coming. Salvador Perez is a better hitter, basically up and down the lineup. Everybody but Michael Garcia, you can say, oh, yeah, they're a better hitter than they've been playing. And here we go. And if it comes with power, then the Royals might have something for a little while, a little something to start building with here.
Well, as I'm watching the game last night, I mean, don't forget, they were playing at the time the team that had the best win-loss record in Major League Baseball. It's not the case anymore after the Royals won last night, but they entered that game. The Cubs were the best team in baseball from a win-loss record perspective, and the Royals were able to get it done. I think what was so important with the game last night is that, first off, Noah Cameron took one on the chin early on, but then settled in there and really, I thought, pitched well. Like, that didn't really faze him, giving up 4 runs in the second inning, 2 home runs, a solo shot from Carson Kelly, and then, you know, a 3-run bomb also. And at that point, you're like, man, it's a 4-1 deficit for the Royals in the second. We've seen this story before where that almost seems insurmountable. And then before you know it, the Royals have tied the game. Then they take the lead on some miscues from the Cubs, and the power comes alive for Kansas City as well. But I thought it was really important that Noah Cameron really kind of settled in there, and it didn't derail the entire game. He still went 6 innings, only gave up those 4 runs. And for a young guy in the rotation and a guy that hasn't really gotten run support much this season at all, yeah, he may have given up 4, but for the first time in what I can remember, maybe in his entire short major league career, he actually got run support from the offense. Like, they were able to pick him up when he didn't have his best stuff. And, you know, I thought that was pretty essential.
Yeah, we're going to dig into this on the other side. They've made up 2 games on one of the wild card teams in 2 days. This is the kind of roller coaster we were talking about. And it goes both directions, and it probably will go both directions over the next couple of weeks here until we get to that deadline of how do you navigate this if you're the Royals? And again, we've been on this for a while. The most likely scenario is you just ride it out. You just play. You know, you just go. So we'll have more on that. We've got the Memphis Tigers trying to join leagues and then not successful. And then we'll get to the latest on their try for the Big 12. That's an interesting story. It's all coming for you today. We got a lot to talk about. It's Albrock and Caster. It's Tuesday. Don't go away.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. One of those NFL storylines, well, two, that we'll talk to Felix Johnson about are these defensive ends here. Now we've got Trey Hendrickson, according to Ian Rappaport and the NFL Beats. He is, left the state for Bengals camp because talks for a long-term extension broke down for him. The Bengals also have one of the rookies that's not signed yet, and their owner went out and was talking about the rookie wants guaranteed money, even if he goes to jail or something. Jerry Jones is out there talking trash for some reason on Micah Parsons. Not sure why. Micah Parsons is kind of out there catching strays. Like, he wants a deal, but you're just sitting here on a Tuesday and Jerry Jones is taking shots on some radio show.
And Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott kind of got a little bit of a stray there too.
Yeah, Dak, you know, he's paid Dak. Dak can take it. But you're still trying to get this figured out with Micah Parsons. He just can't help himself. But, you know, that it shouldn't surprise anybody. We'll get the latest on those situations and these ends demanding all this money while the Chiefs get Karlaftis on a deal that feels pretty normal, feels pretty, you know, where it should be. How do they do that? We'll get into all that with Felix Johnson. Maybe we'll get into it before as we make our way through. But we're talking baseball here. Is the Royals power up last night? They are finding it right now in the month of July. And Jack Caglione is starting to hit a little bit. Salvador Perez continues to hit a lot of it, and everybody's just sort of doing the job here. Tommy, the power is something this team is not probably going to be good at in totality, be great at, but it should be better than it has been. It's been oddly bad this year. Doesn't make any sense that it's been as bad as it's been. And some of the guys that are contributing the greatest to that are heating up here. This could be a difference maker for them. And this is the kind of thing too. Like, even if they're 4.5 games back now, they've gained two games and one game. They gained one game on everybody they're chasing yesterday that currently owns a wild card spot. So that's great news. They may not, by the deadline, be a whole lot closer in the wild card race. Who knows? But even if they aren't, and the trade deadline passes, and the Royals don't do anything, and let's say they do end up trading Seth Lugo, who is cranking up everybody's list now of guys that could be traded. Even if all of those things happen, these are the trends that sort of make you think they could contend anyway, right? After the trade deadline, we're going to have 2 months of baseball to play. So that is one of the strange things about this team too. We've only seen them get hot really one time this year, and they're a better team than that. So maybe it just happens late, and that's fine too.
Yeah, I think the answer to what direction the Royals go, it lies in that conversation of the pendulum swinging so wildly back and forth between them being buyers and being sellers. It's in the middle, and really, I think that's been hidden in plain sight this entire time. And I'll admit, like, I get caught up from game to game or series to series on saying things like, oh man, they need to be sellers. Like, it's not going to happen for them. Get rid of everybody, get value in return. And then they win a couple of games, or like last night, the power shows up for the Royals. And I'm like, man, like, it's right there. They can make the playoffs. Like, let's get some reinforcements in here. So I think it lies somewhere in the middle where, honestly, this team, the way it's constructed right now, it could be a postseason team. Like, they've got the talent to be a playoff caliber team, but we haven't seen the consistency. That's been the number one issue throughout this entire year. We've not seen the consistency offensively, at least, for them to be able to show that they are a playoff caliber team. It really starts and ends with Salvador Perez. He's the captain for a reason. And where he goes, this team goes, honestly, because he's been, I think, and everybody knows this, like, he is the emotional leader of this ball club. And when he's down, the team is down. When he's pressing, the team is pressing. I think those youngsters, and even a guy like Bobby Witt Jr., who is a superstar, I think in some cases maybe takes his cues from Salvi. And, you know, Salvi has not been very good, like was not very good at the very beginning of the season, really struggled. He had that stretch of baseball where, you know, he looked completely lost up there, and you're like, man, like what's going on with Salvi? Is this the start of the decline for him? And then all of a sudden, we've seen it just sort of blossom and the power come back and the offensive stats start jumping off the page at you. Since the All-Star break, by the way, Salvi is 7-for-15, 2 doubles, 4 homers, no strikeouts. And I mean, I think the no strikeouts part is incredibly telling because that was a big knock on him early this season that he was chasing pitches that typically you don't see Salvi chase. We know he has a high chase rate in general, but there were some pitches and you're like, man, Salvi, you've been doing this for too long. Why are you chasing these pitches? And the fact that he's got no strikeouts since the All-Star break tells you that he feels rested, the patience is there, and he knows the power is back.
He's just, he's a streaky hitter. I mean, he's a streaky hitter, but he's also a hitter that can streak for months at a time. He has had a really strong 3 weeks. His month of July is probably ahead of what you'd expect from him. So I don't want to put it all on Salvi, but it is right now. He's been the last guy to come along of the guys we expected to come along. And the other thing that's going to make it easier for Salvi is if Jack Caglione hits, right? If Jack Caglione, that's that opposite field home run yesterday, that's the second time in as many games, or maybe it's the last 3 games, that he has had a critical moment where he took the ball the other way. Now, this one left the yard. The other, I think, was just a single. But he's still, like, you can see his development coming a little bit. Now, all of a sudden, he can protect Salvi to some degree, and Salvi won't get pitched around. And I'm telling you, like, you're a big league pitcher. You watch what Cags is capable of, what looked like an innocent fly ball yesterday left the yard with that oppo power. If you know that's sitting behind Salvi, you're not going to be as inclined. You still would rather pitch to Cags than Salvi, but you're not going to be as inclined to just never give Salvi anything to hit.
I hope that a light bulb went off for Jack Caglione when that home run left the ballpark last night that, oh yeah, I can do that too. Like I can take the ball the opposite way and be productive. I don't have to try to just be a straight up pull hitter because right. I'm not going to get pitches most of the time that are going to allow me to pull the baseball and hit it to right field. And so the fact that he's able to take it the opposite way, and we've seen more than one example. I mean, you mentioned that single that he had and then the home run last night. That had been a critical piece of his game at the plate that he had been lacking since being called up to the majors. If that can develop, and the fact that he can, you know, if he can then hit the ball all over the park, then that adds a different dimension. And pitchers know that, you know, or should learn that, man, you can't really take him outside either because he can go the opposite way with it.
That is one of baseball's best offenses that the Royals played last night. So, you know, no excuses for Noah Cameron, but a little more understandable where he had one of his not better starts, but it wasn't.
It was like, only the second inning. I mean, the second inning
over the pitching side,
the second inning was not good. Once he got away from the second inning, he looked right. Like Noah Cameron has looked all season long.
But in totality, that's if Noah Cameron is got ace potential, which I'm still not sure of, but even if he has top of rotation, right, potential, those are what bad starts need to look like, right? You had a bad inning. Otherwise, you were really effective. He gave up too many hits, but he still struck out 7 in 6 innings, right? Like, he was still effective despite it. And so, yeah, a couple long balls got him. That is a thing in his worst starts this year that have gotten him. He can be, it's being the victim of a long ball in his 3 worst starts this year. He has given up 2 home runs in each of those starts.
By the way, though, like with Cameron, and I think this is an important discussion to have. How many times do we see young pitchers in Major League Baseball that have a bad inning early on and then the wheels fall off? You know, they don't recover from it. They don't come back from it. They end up getting yanked in the 3rd or the 4th. It snowballs for them out of control. And that didn't happen for Cameron. He gave up 4 in the 2nd and then really settled himself back in and let his offense then go pick him up. And before you knew it, the Royals were back with the lead. The way that the Royals won that game last night, that's not the way that the Royals have won games this season. It has not been with the pitcher giving up runs early and then the offense carrying them to get the lead back. That's not been the recipe for success. But it happened, and it worked against one of the better teams in Major League Baseball. I think that there are a lot of different takeaways from that particular game that you can then carry on long-term. Going back to the lineup, I mean, are we going to see John Rave continue to hit a bunch of home runs? I mean, probably not. Like, let's be honest. But if he can be even halfway better than what the other options in left field have been, do the Royals necessarily need to go out and find a left fielder? I mean, if you've got a Nick Lofton, John Rave platoon, both of those guys offensively have been better in the month of July. And if you've got both of them producing at least somewhat in left field, at that point, do you feel like you need to go and trade for a left fielder and another bat in the lineup? I don't know. I mean, that's up to J.J. Piccolo, but it certainly is encouraging to see the current guys at the bottom of that order be able to produce.
Yeah, look, they're not going to make a trade for a bat, I don't think, unless it's somebody that has control beyond this year. It's just, it doesn't make sense at this point. You're 4.5 games back in a race of 8 teams. Like, you don't need, if it's, now look, if they go get a bat that they can control for a while, Duran keeps getting mentioned, not because the Red Sox aren't good, but because they kind of have 4 outfielders right now. That's a different scenario. That's a player you've targeted to help you long term, not just this year. But yeah, you're going to ride it out with these guys, and I'm fine with it. Look, I say this all the time. The Royals, you know, everybody on the planet that watches baseball knows the Royals need offense. But if you really look within the Royals needing offense, there's only one spot on the field where you would replace the player they currently have. That is not a terrible situation, right, for an offense. There are teams that have tons of replacement players. But right now, you're most likely not removing Kyle Isbell, and I agree with that. So it's only left field. You're not putting anybody else out there besides Cags. You don't have room for an infielder right now. Like, that's the only place, really. So if we go through the rest of the season and you said, boy, the Royals have one hole in their lineup, like, okay, fine. Like, who cares, right? Again, and I've said this forever, the greatest improvement for the Royals comes internally. It comes because the guys they already have do more of what we expect them to do. It's not going to change. If they can go find a left fielder that helps them for the next 2-3 years, great. Go for it. I think that's a smart thing to do. But as it currently stands, they don't have a lot of room for change. So this ride it out is fine. Like, they can just sit here, and it's okay. If they do nothing, it's okay, because they're going to be in the mix the rest of the way, most likely, and see if they can take a shot at it. Noah Cameron, back on him. What's impressed me the most about Noah Cameron is, and what makes me think this is all real for him, is if it's not these home runs, teams don't really score on him. Like, that's pretty much the only way teams are scoring on him is by hitting home runs. And he's going to pitch half his games at Kauffman Stadium. So that, like, there are little things like that are advantages to him, and whatever reason that is that's happening, like that's the way teams attack him, they're going to do less of it at Kauffman. So, you know, in half of his starts, he's already at an inherent advantage because they're not hitting him a ton. They're just hitting him hard when they hit him. Great. That again, I never knew when this all started if he was going to be the real deal. I thought last night, and I know he gave up 4 runs, but man, I just thought it was impressive on a day where you really needed your back into your bullpen to be able to catch a breath. He, like, gave up the runs and then jumped back right into it and said, nope, like, we're going to get right back on track here and do what we're supposed to do today.
Yeah. Keep an eye on tonight's game. Keep an eye on the way that 78-year-old Rich Hill pitches for the Royals.
The oldest pitcher for them ever, right?
I know, yeah. And Matt Quatrero confirmed he's not 78, he's 45, but still, he's older than you and me. That doesn't happen a whole lot in Major League Baseball these days. But Matt Quatrero confirmed he would be starting tonight. Keep an eye on how he does. And I hadn't really been following what Hill was doing in AAA up until maybe a week ago. Apparently, he's been pretty lights out in AAA for the Storm Chasers. If he can come in and be productive, and if it looks like he's got longevity on this big league roster long term, at least for the rest of this season, does that sort of draw some conclusions on what the direction might be with Seth Lugo? And I'm not comparing. Good. I'm not comparing Rich Hill to Seth Lugo whatsoever. No. But at least having another replacement option in there, if you do move Seth Lugo, and you've also got guys that are on the shelf like Lorenzen and Reagans, to have another starter in that rotation to help pick up the slack while those guys get healthy. If Hill can pitch and be effective, then I think that also does maybe point to a little bit more of an idea that they could move Seth Lugo.
The Hill and especially the Keuchel signing later, I mean, to me, those have screamed from the beginning depth if they trade a starter, right? Depth if they trade Lugo. And it's not just Lugo, by the way. Chris Bubich would be the most valuable player on the market if the Royals decided to trade him. He's got a year of control and he's a lefty. So if they ever made that call instead of Lugo, now you're talking about probably the biggest piece that'll be out there. Because you've got the control and the fact that, and I don't think that's, I love that Bubich is a homegrown player. I don't think that's crazy either. Like if the Royals somehow made this decision to trade Bubich because he is maximum value right now, Bubich will likely be more expensive in 2 years than Lugo would be. And so, you know, if you don't envision being able to, you know, pay a starting pitcher $25 to $30 million a year, that may be where Bubich is by the time he's a free agent. He's going to bring a bigger return than Lugo. So if the, you know, I think his name has been floated out there, and it's always less likely because people know that he can help the Royals next year, and that's totally great too.
And then you're staring in the face not having either Lugo or Bubich next season because Lugo will probably decline the player option.
So what I'm saying is, though, if you decided, and they may not have enough time to do this, but if you decided, let's trade Bubich, he's the higher valued player, and at the same time work on or finish up as some sort of extension for Lugo, because you've got to think about the money you're going to have to pay Bubich in 2 years. If you can use that elsewhere, but you know, you've got Noah Cameron now, you've got Cole Reagans coming back, you've still got Waka for a little bit. Like, they still have the foundation of a good rotation if they decided to do either one. I don't think they could do both or should do both, but I think they could do one of them. And I think it could help them find the bat potentially that they'll need big picture. Even though I think it's not that, you know, them trading for a bat isn't going to make the difference of their season to me.
Keep in mind, though, too, I mean, Chris Bubich is 8 years younger than Seth Lugo.
He's a more valuable asset, but he brings a more valuable return. You just have to project if you think you're going to be able to pay him in 2 years.
Yeah, Jeff Passan is releasing, I think, daily percentages of different top trade candidates and the likelihood of them getting moved. As of yesterday, Seth Lugo was 80%. Right. Which was the highest I had seen it, I think, throughout this entire time. 80% likelihood that he's going to be moved by Kansas City. I think Chris Bubich was at like 15%.
So Cole Reagans is signed up. He won't be a free agent until 2029. Obviously, Noah Cameron's not going anywhere for a long time. Seth Lugo is possibly gone. We'll see what happens there. But Bubich is a free agent, I think, quicker than most people realize. So you've got to think, if you entertain a Bubich trade and you're the Royals, I would think it would be with the idea that you could somehow get Lugo to come back. And if that was the case, I could endorse that because, I mean, Bubich would bring a haul that you could justify the trade, I would think. The way he's pitching, the fact that he's a lefty, the fact that he has another year of control. I don't know. I know Lugo is likely, more likely. I'm starting to sour a little bit on what that return would be. And think like if you might be better off just keeping him, trying to make a run and getting your compensation through the draft back for him. Maybe not. Maybe a team gets desperate and is willing. We just don't see it a lot anymore on rental type players. And if that happens, then I think you take the calls on Bubich, because if you can get a top-end prospect that helps you long-term or a top-end player that helps you long-term, That's where I think you start to think if you're in this purgatory of the Royals, I think you got to be thinking that way. The rental portion of the Royals is out of the question for an addition, but it's not out of the question to go make an addition because it helps you for a lot of years. They're going to need a left fielder next year too.
Yeah, and don't forget too that all the Royals have to do with Seth Lugo is make a qualifying offer to him, and then if he walks, they get a compensatory pick.
And they'll
make a qualifying offer to him. But if they don't move him, it's not like he'll walk away and the Royals will get nothing in return for him, no kind of value back for him if Lugo ends up walking away. The interesting thing about Chris Bubich that I think is being missed and nobody's really talking about with him is, do the Royals believe that Chris Bubich is a perennial all-star? Do they feel like he will continue to be a great pitcher in the big leagues for a long time to come? This was unexpected for him this season. Like, nobody felt like, I think everybody knew that he was going to be an asset for the team in some capacity because he was really good in the bullpen down the stretch when he came back from Tommy John. But I'm not sure that anybody really thought that he would come in and be consistently the best pitcher in that rotation the entire season. Obviously, he became an all-star. Do the Royals believe that that value will continue? And if they don't think that he's a perennial all-star, then maybe it's worth trying to get as much value as you can out of him right now than keeping him on your team and knowing that in future years, you're not going to get as big of a haul back for him. Now, if they feel like he's going to continue to be, you know, a big-time star, then maybe the urgency is not quite there to move him right this second. But that's one thing that I don't think is being discussed a whole lot is that, is this a flash in the pan, a one-year thing for Chris Bubich, or will he continue to be this effective in seasons to come?
I think the answer is probably somewhere in between, but it certainly could be that he's this effective. I think, that's maybe more likely than being bad, I would think. Seth Lugo has been doing this now for a long time. Like, he's been effective. He's basically been the same player, which is a really good starting pitcher, since he's been turned into a starting pitcher.
Yeah, I'm talking about Bubich.
No, I know. Yeah. I'm trying to compare the two of them. Seth Lugo, you have this long track record of trust. Bubich, you don't as much. But Bubich was okay before he got hurt, right? But remember how effective he was last year out of the pen, too. Like, he's found something. He's just doing it now as a starter instead of a reliever. He would have more trade value. He would have to. He's got the extra year control. He's younger. He's all these things. He's a lefty that could be a young pitcher potentially for some teams that really like to have left-handed pitching. You go and you look at contracts across baseball right now for these starters, and just the ones that recently signed, Max Fried comes to mind, was a free agent signing this year. Blake Snell comes to mind. Free agent signing. You know what Sean Manaea got paid this year, Tommy, as a free agent?
18 million?
3 years, 75
wow.
million.
Okay, so 25 a year. Holy cow.
He and Nathan Eovaldi essentially got the same deal. Now, they're more in Lugo's age range. So Lugo's probably commanding that, right? Lugo's probably commanding more of a 3 year, $75 million deal. Signing him to what those other two got makes a ton of sense. Bubich will be 29 when he's a free agent. So probably more like the contract I would say Carlos Rodon is under, like a 6 year deal. He's making $27 million a year. You can go to Robbie Ray, got a deal this offseason at 5 years, $23 million. I would think that Bubich would get probably a little bit more than that. But just looking at guys that are around that same age and when they got deals, Severino got 22-3. So I think Bubich is going to be in a different stratosphere as far as total money. They'll probably get similar money onto what it's going to be per year. The difference, I think, will be that Lugo's gets like a 3 year deal and Bubich probably gets like a 6 year deal. And I think when you're the Royals, that's where you have to start really thinking down the road. At some point, they're going to want to lock up Vinny Pasquantino. They have Bobby Witt Jr. locked up. At some point, they're going to have to think about Mikel Garcia. At some point, they're going to have to think about Jack Caglione. That one's way down the road. But, you know, if they wanted to, if he turns out to be the real deal and they want to end up doing something like they did with Bobby Witt Jr. to a lesser degree, like you think about those things when you have pitching depth, and the Royals have pitching depth right now in the rotation. It's going to start with as soon, and here's it took me a long time to get to this point. The key probably to all of this is what is going on with Cole Reagans, because you always envision Cole Reagans. Everybody does. Everybody has. Cole Reagans is projected as the ace of this staff. He's been hurt all year, basically. So if you assume everything is fine with him, he's the guy that's going to carry your banner. And now you didn't know this, but there's Noah Cameron right there with him that you can build a rotation around.
I think ideally, in an ideal world, and it's unlikely this would happen, but in an ideal world, the Royals are able to sign Seth Lugo to a 2-year deal. He's going to want 3. So, like I said, this is unlikely.
That's the standard.
But right they sign him to it if he's able to do a 2-year deal, and then that money comes off the books when Chris Bubich is ready for a new contract. And then you can kind of roll the money that you're paying Seth Lugo, who by that time will be, what, 38 or 39, into a new deal for Chris Bubich. That would be ideal for the Royals. Lugo's going to want 3 years, I would imagine. And there are going to be teams out there that are going to be willing to give him that 3rd year. Regardless if we're talking about $25 million a year, $27 million a year, whatever that is, there are going to be teams that are going to be willing to give him 3 years. So again, I think that's really unlikely. But for the Royals, it's too bad that it couldn't time out that way to where you've got the money from the Lugo new deal potentially rolling into what a new deal might look like for Chris Bubich.
Yeah, it almost can't be both. So trade one of them and deal with the rest. I mean, maybe there is some, and look,
or,
the other outcome
or
is
you don't do anything with either one of them this year. You let it ride out for the remainder of this year. You make a qualifying offer to Seth Lugo to get that draft pick in return if he walks, and then you deal with Chris Bubich next year when that contract is almost going to be up.
And I will tell you that if that is the outcome, and it's probably 50-50 that it is, I'm fine with it, because again, I think this team is worth giving the shot to figure it out and make the playoffs. I do. I know they're out there. Their chances are so small right now. I want to say people are, it's like the percentages or the computers give them like a 0.1% chance. But they are as talented as any team that they're competing with for these wild card spots. They have as deeper a starting rotation than any of them, especially with Reagan's back. And they have a lineup that we're seeing now, when it does what it's supposed to do, is at least league average, if not a little bit above league average. Could be, but it just hasn't been this year. So I'm fine with it if that's the way they go. But if they want to play a little chess at the moment, then I'm fine with that too, because they're trying to build a new ballpark. They have a foundation. They're doing good things, right? They're making sound decisions holistically. So just things to think about at this trade deadline. They have different ways they can go on the offensive and trade away, but still be making moves that make sense long term. It's hard to imagine them having both Seth Lugo and Chris Bubich beyond next year, really beyond this year. So, you know, if they decide to make a move because of that, while they're not like in the thick of things totally, then that's fine too. They're both fine outcomes, and JJ Piccolo's made a lot of good decisions, and we'll see what he does. The other thing to think about with the Royals, they have been very, very good. Their superpower right now has been finding starting pitching in places where you didn't know it existed. Finding Waka and Lugo 2 years ago, finding Rich Hill potentially. We'll see how he does tonight. But the way he's been pitching, like this is their superpower right now, is finding guys on the, not on the scrap heap, but going and, you know, a little under the radar and evaluating and identifying them and bringing them in and watching them be effective. They've been really good at it.
I mean, what do you think the realistic expectation is for a guy like Rich Hill tonight, who's 45 years old?
Give you four innings and keep you in the game. That's my expectation. I haven't looked at his game logs of how deep he's going into starts in the minor leagues, but keep it competitive for four innings, and I'd be good with that for Rich Hill. I mean, he's just stopgapping until Lorenzen gets over whatever it is that's ailing him. But I'm glad they have him. Don't you feel better? I know he's 45 or whatever, but don't you feel better about Rich Hill than a bullpen game at this point? I do.
I would. I mean, and knowing that you've got Daniel Lynch on the shelf currently, I mean, he'd be the guy that would be kind of that stopgap, you know, short term. You don't have him right now. And so you don't have a spot starter on that pitching staff that you can lean on and go to when you need somebody. I mean, it was telegraphed. Obviously, the Royals had named their starter and Rich Hill had been doing pretty well in AAA. So, you know, we'll see if he's got enough gas left in the tank to be able to stay a part of that pitching staff throughout the remainder of this season. But, yeah, I mean, look, like, he's got the experience. He's just got to keep the Royals in the game tonight.
Yeah. And they'll take their swing. The Cubs can listen. The Cubs are one of the best offenses in baseball. And I'm sure Rich Hill has pitched in Chicago at Wrigley at some point, or lots of points over his career. So he'll be familiar enough with it, but find the power. It's, you know, it's Wrigley. You can hit some home runs there. Go do it again and give yourself a chance that way. That game will be tonight. Maybe more on that in the second hour, as we've talked a lot of Royals this hour. When we come back, let's talk about the Memphis Tigers, proud members of the American, right? It's an interesting spin, but we'll get into it when we return.